This is Social Media Simplified, the podcast that takes the guesswork out of using social media to build your audience and increase your exposure on the web. Join us as a social media scholar for exclusive tips, tactics, and strategies to create content, market your brand, and much more. Let's do this. Hey, social media scholars, welcome to Social Media Simplified. I'm Nathan Garrett, your digital dynamo.
And I'm Lante Tacona, your collaboration connoisseur.
And on today's episode, we're going to interview Justin Breen, CEO and founder of the PR firm Brepik Communications. And on today's episode, we're going to pull back the curtain on how he builds a business where he helps clients tell their stories to maximize exposure, all while still spending quality time with his wife and two kids. The ultimate American dream.
Sounds amazing. Let's get to it.
Well, yeah, we'll just go ahead and start here, man. So I'll kind of briefly introduce you. A good friend of ours, Hayden. So you know Hayden Humphrey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's the one that introduced us. He's the success coach. We actually had him on the podcast in an earlier episode.
Right, and that's how I had seen that and reached out, and I thought what I do and in terms of how I've used social media, I thought it would be a good fit. So here we are, yet another example of how social media works. So
fantastic, for sure, man. Bringing people together. Love it. All right. Well, so let's just jump right in, Justin. And before we kind of get to the meat of the, discussion, maybe you can give us a brief, summary of, who you are, what you're about, what motivates you, and maybe one thing that is not on your LinkedIn profile or that people wouldn't know about you.
Well, great. First of all, I really appreciate you guys having me on. I love talking about my business and how I've grown it and of course, how social media has benefited me. So I'm Justin Breen. I'm founder CEO of Brepik Communications, LLC. It's a PR firm. I started April 16th, 2017. And essentially, Brepik writes stories and pitches those stories for its clients, which have included or do include places like Allstate, University of Illinois, Salvation Army, McCormick Foundation, law firms, physicians, national IT firms, national lodging companies. So it doesn't really matter what the vertical is or how big the business is as well. And it's been really fun, really successful. The best part of the business has been the fact that I get to see my family and my wife and two kids who are Jake and Chase, 6 and 4 respectively. And it's been a really cool journey over the past almost 2 years to see this take off. In terms of things that are not on my LinkedIn profile that people don't know about me, actually was very shy as a child and even in young adult. And I think journalism and all the networking and things like that I've done with my business have certainly helped with that.
That's fantastic. So, coming from maybe being a shy person or, more introverted, what led you to journalism? That sounds like, you have to really start to interact and really be social. So how'd you find yourself there?
So this is really all I've ever wanted to do my whole life was be a journalist. And having this PR firm is essentially an extension of those skills. I really don't look at what I do now as PR. It's more of journalism and really finding good connections for the stories that Brepik writes for media and for the clients that Brepik has. So, but yeah, I mean, I've always been a very curious person and enjoyed sports. I initially was a sports writer, sports editor, things like that, and always just kind of into games and reading newspapers in the sports section with my dad especially. And it's just, this is really, all I've really enjoyed doing in terms of professionally and started even in high school was broadcasting Glenbrook North. That's where I went in Northbrook, but broadcasting basketball games and soccer games for the school's TV station. And in college, working for the school's paper, I went to University of Illinois, so working for the Daily Illini. And I just really just enjoy doing it. And I still do after I'm almost 42 and continue to really enjoy doing these things.
That's awesome, man. So I heard you're into sports. Who do you follow?
So now that I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, I don't really follow anybody anymore. But, huge Blackhawks fan. Used to be one of those people that had Blackhawks license plates and grew a playoff beard. I don't necessarily do any of that anymore. So my attention is basically on my family and running this business as well now. But I am very involved with my kindergarten son's in his school now in terms of being a room parent and book fair chair and lunch volunteer. So that's a lot of fun, but does take up a lot of time.
I can imagine, man. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting how you got into journalism. It sounds like you and your dad had a pretty close relationship and that really inspired you to take that career path.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And so my dad, very interesting man. He was 61 when I was born. So he fought in World War II and Korea War. And so he passed away, unfortunately, when I was 13. But he kept a diary when he was fighting in Europe, when he was fighting the Nazis. And so every now and then I look at his diary, and it's very interesting because he writes almost the exact same way that I write. And I never read his diary until maybe the last 10 years or so. So it's kind of a nice way of staying connected to him, even though he's no longer here. But then also our brains work the same way in terms of how we told the story, whether he was in a foxhole or shooting bombs at Germans, and then just how I tell stories about subjects when I was a journalist or clients now on this side of things.
That's awesome. So I can relate to you on that story of the diaries. A few years ago, my dad's an academic. And so a few years ago, I never really visited him at work. And I decided I was going to go, hang out in his office and, see what he does. And I got in there and he had to leave for a meeting. So I was just hanging around at his desk and I looked up on his bookshelf and I saw a whole bunch of like little leather books, looked like encyclopedias, but mini versions. So I pulled one off the shelf and I noticed that in pencil in the front cover, he'd written a date. It was 1993, that one. And he was keeping, a journal or a log, more so of his ideas and concepts and things like that. And then I started like flipping through them all. And I was like, wow, he's really, keeping track of his ideas. And I asked him, do you ever like review these and come back? He's like, yeah, all the time. I have a thought or something to come up. And he says, yeah, I remember 1993. I came up with this idea. It's in this book and he'll pull it right up. So it's kind of like a log of his mind per se, a library. So yeah. That was cool that you said that. It reminded me of that.
And does your brain work the same way?
I did notice that my handwriting, definitely there are some characteristics that are the same, just like you. Yeah. Far as like ideas, I think it was more so of what he was writing, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't necessarily emotions or like just thoughts, but it was like concepts, ideas that he would have, mm-hmm. kind of incomplete. They're not really, there's no beginning, middle, and end to it. And I do that. I do that a lot. I have whiteboards and notebooks and not as organized, but right. I did see that similarity. So I
think, so it's a good way in terms of when I was a journalist and what I do now as well. It's always really good early on to ask people about who their parents are and what they did. And that most people don't ask others about their parents. And almost always that leads to something that will likely be in the story or perhaps be the focal point of the story, like whether they never knew their parents or their father or mom were heroes, or they overcame some incredible odds, or they were first generation, from another country. And it's always good to ask people about their parents. And then also just kind of how I ask you, like, where does your brain come from? Does it come from your dad's side of the family or your mom's side, or maybe you're like your grandpa or something? And when you talk about someone's family, they really start to let you in on their lives and something that, what media will actually care about. In terms of what a story and then what the general public will care about as well. Because a lot of times the media doesn't really care about what you do in terms of professional, unless it's really, really, really interesting, but they will care about you as a person, if you have a super inspirational or just cool story.
That's really cool, man. Yeah, it sounds like, would you say you kind of take that approach with your clients as well when it comes to when you first onboard them and trying to really dig deep into their personal lives and showcase yep. those types of stories on social media?
Yeah, that's exactly how my brain works. So, you know, when I sit with a potential client, for the most part, they'll go on for about 10 minutes about them and their company and how well it's doing. And I'll go, well, that's great. I'm very happy for you. But basically nobody cares about that.
That's true.
So, and it's right. So, and that's, and you laugh, but it's like, these are like, you know, some of these are major companies that I tell that to. And I think people forget about that sometimes, that it's like, it's not about the company. It should be about you. But so my skill in terms of how my brain works is just from doing this my whole life, even before I was a professional, is I just know what a good story is. Like, I will know immediately when somebody says something that that should be the focal point of the story. So I'll talk to someone for an hour, and that person will say nothing of interest in terms of something the media or public will care about. But then in a 5-second span, they'll say something that's super interesting. And I'll be like, okay, that's your story. That's what it should be. And so that's why, you know, my company has been so successful, because the stories I write are very strategic in terms of what media can be targeted to. But then also, like, it's actually a story people will read. They'll actually care about it. And that's the most important thing.
So Justin, that's really interesting that you say that. And it sounds like, you know, you've sort of really found a hidden gem, you know, niche or an angle to come at this from. I'm curious to know, you know, what is the benchmark, the typical standard, you know, media company doing out there? You know, that, you know, obviously they're not taking this approach. This is a unique one for you. What's the general sort of rule of thumb when it comes to doing what you do as far as industry?
So I literally created this model based on how PR firms annoyed me and failed me when I was a journalist for 20 plus years. So as a journalist, you know, you get 200 emails a day with these bulk emails from PR firms, whether it's giant firms or whether it's individuals, with these really poorly written, annoying, boring press releases. And I'm guessing you can figure out what journalists do with those, but they just delete them. And so what that does is a couple things. One, it just annoys journalists, but then also it just burns bridges. And you never want to deal with those people again, because journalists, for the most part, they are overworked, overstressed. You know, it's a very volatile market. You don't know if you're going to have a job. And then you get these really annoying emails and that just that are self-serving for the client. And so, you know, what I have done is create, you know, stories that are actually important and things that journalists will care about. But then also I very strategically market it a lot of times through social media, whether it's Twitter direct messaging or Facebook message or on LinkedIn or some other way. And I have about 30,000 followers on social media, and thousands of them are journalists. So I'm very like, I won't bother somebody unless it's a story that's worth their time. So I literally will not write a story or sign with a client unless they have a marketable story or something I think journalists will care about. Cause you can't, the relationships I have with journalists are too important to burn those type of bridges.
So, from what you've just described there, I've learned a little bit more about your business and what you actually do. So I want to kind of like say it back to you, and maybe you can correct me if I interpreted that wrong. So what you do is you work on the side of the client. A client may want to get their story out into the media, and then you help them craft the story and then yep. send it to the correct journalists for that publicity via social media or other avenues. Is that correct?
Yep. That's a very good way of summing it up. And anyone can go to my website and see what I'm doing. I don't hold any secrets, because another thing that I really didn't like about PR firms, and including from switching over to becoming a PR firm, is like it's just a lot of BS and a lot of glad handing, and I'm just not like that. I'm super direct, and if people don't want to work with me in terms of the style that I do, or, you know, the methodology that I have, which is super successful, by the way, for all of my clients, but if they don't want to do it, it'll be like, well, okay, go somewhere else or whatever. That's fine. I mean, because I've found that my clients are like, they're dreamers like me. They understand the value of it. They don't mess around. And then they just listen to what I say, because they value me as they value me as the expert. But you know, if you go to my website, it explains the entire process of, in terms of essentially what you said. My firm works with the client to develop a list of story ideas that are, again, interesting, but then that also have a news peg, meaning why is this a story now? If you're pitching a story now, it's, you know, March, and the event's not until October, media is going to be like, why are you doing this right now? So the news peg, it's important. If the event's in April, then yeah, now's a good time to do it. And then I'll go ahead if you have a question.
Oh, yeah. So just to let everyone know, what is your website address?
Oh, sure. It's www.brepicllc.com. So that's B as in boy, R, E, P as in pony, I, C as in cobra, LLC.com, brepicllc.com.
Yeah, and when I went to your website, I noticed you had the bean as your banner photo.
One of them, yes.
One of them, yeah. So you are based in Chicago. Is the majority of your clients in Chicago?
Yeah, so I would say that, but like when I was working with Allstate, that was a national campaign, and University of Illinois is an international campaign. And I've had clients in Indiana and Wyoming and Wisconsin as well. So it doesn't really matter where it is. The IT firm that I work with, that's a national campaign, and I've gotten them on TV in places like San Diego and Minneapolis and Kansas City, Missouri. So, and I have media contacts all over the country and even the world in some cases. So with what I do, it doesn't really matter where the business is, and again, what the business is as well.
Awesome. So, curious to know, you were obviously, you know, a journalist and going through that, you know, rather, you know, untasteful, you know, email strings and all that kind of, you know, lifestyle. And at some point you decided that you were going to take ownership of that. You realized that there's a different way that you believe works, and you were going to go start your own agency. So how long did you have to think about that before you decided now is the time? I mean, was this something that was on your mind for a very long time, or tell us about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, so I started this business officially April 16th, 2017. I was working at the time at DNA Info, which was a news site in Chicago that specifically covered the city of Chicago. So from April to about June, when I resigned from DNA Info, I was doing this and then also working at DNA Info, making sure that there were no conflicts of interest or anything like that in terms of my clients, conflicting with anything I was doing as a journalist. But I also, no one really knew I was doing this yet. Mm-hmm. So from that time, in that month and a half to 2 months, I reached out to 5,000 folks via social media, thousands of my contacts. And out of those 5,000, you know, call outs, I got my first five clients for this. And when I had told myself when I got to five clients, I would resign from DNA Info. So got my fifth client on a Thursday, resigned from DNA Info on a Friday. And then that next Monday, Robert Feeder, who's the preeminent media journalist in Chicago, wrote the story that I had started my own firm. So, but we talk about social media, how it helps. I mean, that's essentially where I got my first five clients in terms of, hey, here's what I'm doing, would love to meet up. And it was countless meetings, countless emails, messaging, especially via LinkedIn. But it paid off. And I'll tell you later how Allstate became a client, because it's really a pretty crazy thing on social media as well. But that's really what kickstarted my business a couple months later.
So back to that earlier, when you were able to quit that job finally when you got that fifth client. Describe how that felt to be able to quit that full-time job and actually start your own business officially.
And before you answer that, also, where are you as far as your family at this stage? Do you have a wife, kids, or, you know?
Yep. Yeah, good question. Both very good questions. So, my kids are 6 and 4 now. So this is about 2 years ago. So I want to say they were about 4 and 2 at the time. And, you know, very important to mention about my family is my wife, Sarah. First of all, she's amazing. Like, she's the most wonderful human being ever. But she also has, you know, she's got a really good full-time job. She's a pediatrician. We have amazing benefits. So in terms of, like, obviously starting a business is scary and that kind of thing, but we're very fortunate that I have the advantage that my wife has this great job that's not, you know, not in jeopardy, and we have these good benefits. So it's not as scary, I would say, as the average person, you know, doing this, where it's like, if it doesn't work, you're doomed. But that said, still, it's like, you know, going from corporate, which is, you know, that's the lack of a better term, that's basically what I was doing as a journalist for 20 plus years, to starting your own business. It's very similar to jumping out of a plane and you don't know if the parachute's going to open. I would say that's the the best way of describing it. So when I was able to actually resign and announce this, an absolute, like, feeling of elation that this journey officially could begin and people really knew about it. And every day since, it's been a lot of fun, a lot of ups and downs, but I mean, I would never, you never want to say never, but I can never see myself going back to corporate. I mean, this lifestyle is just so much, so much better in so many ways.
So I can resonate with that as well. So when I was an engineer for 8 years, I know we talked a little bit earlier about this, and then, you know, I went through a similar process, found my, you know, weighed my risks out, and I decided that I was going to take this leap of faith and leave my 8 years of tenure as an engineer and move into technology, right? Internet software, and really just completely change industries. And I'm really excited when I made the change. You know, I quit on a Friday. I started my new job on a Monday, but, One interesting emotion that I was going through was, you know, I had just quit my job. I'm onto this new journey. What I've been working on for the past X amount of years has finally come to fruition. What do I do next?
I've got it now. And you reached the top of the mountain.
Yes.
What do you do now?
Right.
Yeah. And so did you ever have feelings like that where you were going, you had a job, but you were just making your way toward that fifth client to finally be able to quit and officially run your business?
Yep.
When that did finally happen, I know you said you were elated, but was there also that weird feeling of, oh wow, I've accomplished this. Like, what's next?
So one, I feel like that every day, and I will continue to feel that way every day, probably for the rest of my life, as long as I'm an entrepreneur and running a business. And just from talking to very high level entrepreneurs who literally, I mean, they have nothing to worry about in terms of finances. They feel the same way as well. That's just kind of, in my opinion, and after talking to a ton of entrepreneurs during this process, that's how we all kind of feel. And what's been interesting is, like, I always thought there was something wrong with me in terms of in the corporate world. Like, I just never fit in that model. And I always thought it was me, there was something wrong, but it's not that at all. It's just, I was really meant to do this. And being an entrepreneur has enabled me to prove to myself what I'm really capable of. And it's been really exciting in that regard. But yeah, like, this company has far exceeded any expectations I ever could have had. But in terms of the feeling that you're talking about, it's like, yes. So what do I do? What do I do next? How do I, you know, do I scale this? Do I continue to have this really great lifestyle that I have now? Do I hire a bunch of people? I just don't. And I know we want to talk about that, but I just don't know. and I don't know if 2 years in is enough to really figure that out yet.
Yeah, thriving in the unknown. That's the life of an entrepreneur. It doesn't really.
That's correct.
Yeah, you don't really get that end and say I've done it. You know, it's continuous.
Right. Reaching that point of success, which it sounds like you're getting there. Really, it's like the next question really is, you know, do I want to scale? Because if you scale, that's going to bring on a lot more responsibilities and potential headaches because of that.
That's correct.
Yeah. I do have a question. Justin, you mentioned that, you know, this business has exceeded all of your expectations that, you know, you thought could even happen. So let's take it back to, you know, the social media piece. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you reached out to 5,000 contacts, all using social media, and how that really was the cornerstone to getting you to where you are right now. So what was your social media approach? You know, when you decided you were going to reach out, I mean, what was your messaging looking like? What did that turn into? And then how did you continue to grow that using social media?
That's a really, really good question. So I spent weeks and weeks and weeks reaching out to people, especially on LinkedIn, essentially saying, hey, and I was very careful to make sure I didn't tell anyone that, you know, where it could impact my full-time job. But so I essentially reached out to people saying, hey, I've started this company. If you're looking for someone who writes really interesting stories and has a lot of good media connections, you know, I would love to talk to you. And I know that it was really crazy because I accidentally messaged that same thing to the same person twice. Mm. But that's the person who actually wrote back to me. And and that became one of my clients. Nice. So, and then, and so like people are right. And people are like, you know, people are really happy for me and like the success that this company's had. And I really appreciate it, but they didn't see me at the very beginning. And I'm glad we're talking about this, 'cause it's like, that's the type of work that it took. The constant rejection and, you know, or just being ghosted or meeting with people for weeks and sometimes months and then it not working out. But, you know, it's not 1% of these emails or messages paid off. It was 0.1%. Mm-hmm. So, and that's just how it is. My closing rate's a little better now. than 0.1%, but yeah, that's the type of effort and work that it took, and social media was the main. It was almost the only thing, really. I had a couple of other relationships that helped pay off, but it was essentially social media that became, you know, as you said, the cornerstone of the company.
Yeah. So man, you mentioned earlier about having to do that social media campaign, that original campaign, right? We're talking about essentially getting you leads for your business. And was your model basically social media campaign, generate that interest through a message or two messages, and then phone call and then close? Was that your goal?
Yeah. I mean, I guess in, you know, the way you're making it sounds great, but I mean, essentially I was there. It wasn't really, it wasn't that strategic. It was more of like, let's see what happens and reach out to as many people as I can and see what happens. And when I first started my business, like I was running, Twitter handles and Instagram, accounts for companies. And what I found out in the first couple months of my business is what I really liked doing was writing these stories and then pitching them to media. And as time has gone on, that's essentially what my company does. It, in terms of how it uses social media now, it promotes these stories. Like if the Chicago Tribune picks up a story, I'll put it on my social media platform. But now the whole model is essentially writing these stories and pitching them.
Yeah, you know, I'd say that it's interesting that what really jumped out at me from that, what you just said, is that you know, you've been working, I'm going back to, you've been working, you know, for 20 years as a journalist, right?
Right.
You know that you like doing journalism, but you know, you haven't really niched down, right? At least not, mm-hmm. not initially. And then over time, you know, your current, call it 9-to-5 corporate job, you were able to sort of discover, you know, what truly it is that you're interested in doing.
Yep.
And then from that point, you were able to kind of springboard into your own thing. And I think there's a message there, because I talk to people who are interested in entrepreneurship all the time, and they're working these jobs. So they've been, you know, maybe 2 years, 3 years, and like, I want to start a business. And, and you know, they're not necessarily ready, and nope. because they haven't had enough experience to discover.
They're not an expert yet.
Passion, right. For them to right, leave and do that on their own and become an expert or an influencer.
Yep.
And so I think there's something to be said there about, I guess also being an entrepreneur, having patience, knowing that it's definitely not an overnight success, you know, story. There is a lot of effort and time that goes into that.
Yeah. You mentioned how many failures you had to go through, right, to get to this point. You knew it was going to be messy, but you decided to jump in anyway and take that imperfect action.
It's so, you know, it's so great. And this might sound weird, but that you use the word failure, because you have to fail so many times in this. I'm talking hundreds and thousands of times of failure before you can, you know, find out the path forward. And again, meeting with really high level entrepreneurs during this process, the best advice I got was do what you're good at and what you like to do. And I really, really, really love writing stories, and I really like pitching stories to media. So even when I was a journalist at DNA Info, I would write stories that were like exclusives, or I'd get them before other media. And when that story published, I would send them to other media contacts, because I wanted them to do their own version and then credit as first reported by DNA Info in their story. So I was essentially doing this job even as a journalist. And, you know, we talk about being an expert. Like this, I am 100% an expert in this field. And I tell people all the time that, like, I'm only good at a couple things, and that's this job and then being a father, and I'm essentially useless at everything else. And people always like laugh at that, but I'm really not kidding. Like I'm actually like, in terms of this, I know that I'm the best at this, and that's not an ego or anything. It's just because I've been doing it my whole life, and it's what I love to do, and I just know how to do it. And that's why the company's been successful, is because these people understand that I'm an expert, and my clients understand and appreciate that I'm an expert in this, and they're experts in their own thing. And so they just let me do my job and get their amazing stories out there. It's pretty simple.
That's awesome, man. It sounds like, yeah, based on your years and years and years of experience and knowing that you are an expert in this, was there at any time, did you ever have that classic imposter syndrome that most entrepreneurs get?
In terms of what? Like, explain what that means.
Well, imposter syndrome is really, you know, in the back of your mind, you know you are an expert and you can serve your clients with what you do. But there's also that other voice in your mind saying, you know, are you good enough for this? Am I good enough to do this? A lot of entrepreneurs feel that way. They might feel like they're not ready yet, or they don't, you know, who can I really help? Right. They second guess themselves.
Did 100%. Oh, every day, every day. So like my wife is, again, very practical, super smart. She's a pediatrician, and she doesn't really get excited about anything in a good way. But when I told her I was starting this business, she got really excited, because she knew that it was going to do well, just because like she knows how hardcore and type A I am at this kind of stuff. And I'm so passionate. But yeah, I mean, and even this past year, where financially it was incredible and, you know, really helped my clients. And I was just like, okay, so how am I going to do that again next year? And she's like, why can't you just be happy with this? I'm like, well, that's just not how I am. I'm never going to be satisfied with that. And that's I think and you guys understand that. Most people don't understand it.
All the time.
Yeah, being present and being able to celebrate your successes in the moment, that is so key, because when you can celebrate those milestones as they're happening, in a way that keeps propelling you forward, right?
Right.
Positive reinforcement you can actually place for yourself, and that will give you that motivation and that belief in yourself in the future that you can continue doing this.
Right. And so, the company's about 2 years. In terms of times where I've actually, and happy's the wrong word, but like excited and like really proud of myself, I would say when Allstate agreed to be my client, I was really, really like, I was blown away by that. When University of Illinois signed with me and then re-signed, it's the Geese College of Business. They're an incredible client. I felt super excited about that. And then last year, my company hosted a client appreciation party at an Arlington Park racetrack suite. And it was just really like, I was like, I can't believe this life never would have been possible, if I had stayed a journalist. So that said, it's only been a couple times where I really took like a breath and appreciated what has happened. Other than that, it's like constantly trying to push it forward and serving my clients now, and then trying to attract new clients, and then using social media to build the business.
Yeah, and just based on that right there, it'd be a great time to discuss, you know, where do you want to see this business in a few years? I know you mentioned earlier you're still not sure about growing and scaling and hiring people, but I imagine you have somewhere, you know, in your mind that the goals that you want to achieve and where you want to take this business.
And before you answer that, also add on this aspect of, you know, your son's, they're growing up, right?
Yep.
School's coming up. I don't know, maybe you and Sarah are deciding, you know, maybe you want to move or settle down somewhere. So kind of.
Oh, we're settled. We are settled. We are definitely never moving again. Still, their kids are out of college or whatever.
Perfect. Well, just kind of add that into that, layer that into that, as you discuss, you know, where you want your business to go.
Right. So, in terms of the business a year from now, I have no idea where it's going to be. I definitely have plans if I want to scale it. I have a really good foundation in place in terms of hiring people who would serve as reporters and things of that nature. And when I say reporters, it would be people that would write the stories, and then I would still pitch it, and I could hire people who could pitch the stories as well. This model, in terms of how successful it is, it's absolutely scalable in any type of market. But, you know, I really like the life that I have now. And I've been talking to other experts and entrepreneurs in terms of other things that I could do, whether it would be going on speaking tours or writing a book or things like that. But, you know, right now and this contradicts what I said earlier, but I am trying as best as I can to enjoy what is going on right now while also looking into the future. But I did want to tell you about how Allstate found me as a client, because it's so important with what this program is about. And it talks about the power of social media. So this is probably like a couple months into the company starting. And I randomly got an email from a corporate leader at Allstate asking me to be a judge in one of their like inspirational teen competitions. So I said, well, I can't do that, but I'd love to just meet with you and hear more about this. And so I had a meeting with them, and they had found me. They didn't even know I had my own company. They had found me because I was an influencer on social media, because I had tens of thousands of followers. And then I wrote inspirational stories, which is 100% true as a journalist. So, but after having that meeting, it led to another meeting, and then they became my first big client, but it's only because they had another company that had somehow found me through social media as a social media influencer. And they became my biggest client. And there's another really interesting story that it's kind of weird sounding, but it has a great ending. And again, in terms of the power of social media, I really like McDonald's. And I went into a McDonald's one day and they had taken off the number 2 extra value meal, which is the 2 cheeseburger meal. And I got, Okay, good. And I got really angry about it, like in a joking way. And if you follow me on social media, like I make fun of myself all the time or the silly things that my kids do. Like it's all for jokes and people like it and laugh. But so I sent an angry message and tagged McDonald's in it on Twitter. And 6 months later, they sent a reply saying, "Hey, we heard your complaint and we put the number 2 meal back on the extra value meal." So I screen grabbed that and then posted all that, you know, that message on all my social media accounts, including Facebook. And it got like hundreds of likes because people were like happy for me. Like, you know, I don't really care. It's a 2 cheeseburger meal. It's not a big deal. But like one of the people that liked it, she was like, "Hey, really happy for you about the 2 cheeseburger meal. And my client would really like to work with you." So wow. That was a five-figure contract that I got out of. So it's like, but obviously nothing was ever intended to get, I was never intended to get a client out of that. But it was like, that is what social media is all about. It's keeping your name out there and then, you know, showing people that you're a human being and that you're not a robot or whatever. And I found that all these posts I do on LinkedIn or Twitter and Facebook, they are funny, but like they do literally pay off sometimes.
Absolutely. I love it. Absolutely love it. So just for the listeners, how can we connect with you? Is it LinkedIn, Twitter? You mentioned a few things. What's the best way to get in contact with you?
Yeah. So like, in terms of a job, like I'm super committed to social media because I just see the value of it. Not only for my business, but just to like, that's just how it is now. People are constantly on their phones and on their computers. So yeah, you can get a hold of me on Twitter, which is at Brepik Breen. Please send me a Facebook friend request. I'm on LinkedIn, Justin Breen. And my website again is www.brepikllc.com. And you can reach out to me there as well.
Well, awesome, Justin. It's been great having you on. We really enjoyed learning about your journey, really, from being employed to taking that leap, starting your own business, learning about your family. And lastly, before we wrap everything up, you did mention that Allstate story. I kind of want to learn a little more about how you got that big of a client.
Yeah, again, so I'm very direct in when I meet with people, and I found that the people that sign with me, they don't really mess around. They're just like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. We're going to sign with them. So when I met with them after the initial meeting, about being a judge in this competition, yeah. and I showed them, here's how this process works. And here are the results in terms of, you know, the story that Brepik writes, and then here's the placements, like whether it's in the Tribune or on WGN TV or it's in the Kansas City Star or publications around the country. And they were super impressed and wound up signing. I was with them for a full year and got them in publications all over the country, like Cranes New York and places like that. And it was super, super fun working with them. And I enjoy working with big companies like Allstate and University of Illinois, but also mid-sized places like Chicago Academy for the Arts, which is a private arts high school that's just incredible. And even one-person financial advisors for millennials like Cortland Cofield, he's gotten him in tons of publications. And so it doesn't matter what type of business it is or how big it is, because the process is the same and it's extremely effective, and the results are great for everybody.
That's awesome. Thanks again, Justin, for joining us today and sharing your story. This has been absolutely fantastic. Super appreciate like the insights. I mean, I definitely like learned a lot. And I think personally, the one thing that jumped out at me again was the story about, you know, how you definitely spent putting the work 20 years as a journalist.
Yep.
Before you came to this aha moment. Right. And I think that's just a big message for all of those entrepreneurs out there who are, you know, skin in the game. They've been doing this for, you know, many years, you know, 8 years, 9 years, 10 plus, you know, be patient, you know, thrive in that unknown. And, yeah, I think that's really what spoke to me. So again, thanks for your time. I really appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, it's great. And it's great to show that this type of life, it really is. It's really possible if as you said, you put the work in and that you have a really good idea. And that's what it's about. It's about putting the work in and having a good idea that you believe in. And if you do that and you just keep trying and don't give up, you can be super successful. That's it.
All right. Thanks, Justin. We'll talk soon.
Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate you doing this.
All right, guys. That was the interview with Justin Breen. You've been listening to Social Media Simplified. I'm your collaboration connoisseur, Lante Tacona. You can connect with me on LinkedIn at LANTEI.
And I'm Nathan Garrett, your digital dynamo. You can find me at nathangarrett.net.
Catch us on the next episode, guys. Later.